love to call you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
The mailbox is full and cannot accept any messages at this time. Goodbye.
Greetings, the automatically deleted husband. Automatically deleted again. I did send a postcard today. Yesterday, my fifth hike to Big Frog was scheduled. It is for your birthday. Love, Dad. This was to Zadonk, because yesterday I scheduled a hike that I think is likely to transpire for Zadonk's birthday. And it's ironic that because yesterday I sent a card to George, simply said, 50 days left, all is well. See yesterday's voicemail in reference to the day before where he talked about the all is well line from, excuse me, 2 Kings 4, I think it is, the Shunammite woman. But, you know, yesterday I mentioned that it appears that I have a visitor coming. And so today, because Run for Their Freedom that I did the video about last year is this Saturday. And there are issues with that. But what I did is I found a path that I think is actually slightly over 5K, but I sure hope it is a lot over 5K because my times have been terrible. My times have been really bad. But I did it only for the second time today. 30 seconds faster, but still, whoa, am I slow. I am terribly slow. It is race walking, you know, and of course I do it with a bag over my shoulder, which is kind of inconvenient. I'm glad it was faster, but still, it was a disappointment. But when I was walking, I saw a, looked like a granddaddy with his grandson. And granddaddy, maybe roughly my age, and the grandson, teenage, I think. He was wearing a hat. Reminded me of the hat that George wore. Not a little bit, a lot. But anyway, so two other things. One thing I wonder about, because I wonder about what will transpire for especially the attitude of my fellow Christian community and, of course, my family, because clearly there are events going on. You know, Ukraine was a big deal, a big focus, but suddenly there's a sudden shift. And the big news is Israel and Palestine, you know, which is a controversial subject in itself. And two things have come to mind that I really wondered about. One is there was a lot of arguments about World War II and to what degree, you know, the various things being staged. There's the I think apparently fairly strong evidence about what we know about Pearl Harbor, what we know about the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, whatnot, is not the commonly told story. The idea of so many other things are not quite the commonly told story. But what really initiated where it actually kicked into, you know, an actual formal declaration of war was this cross-border fighting between Poland and Germany. And my understanding, I don't know if there's any controversy on this, but it's well understood it was a false flag. So it was set up to look like, oh, the Polish government has done something vile to us, let's go to war. And there's a lot of arguments about what actually happened in setting up a whole lot of issues around World War II, including the idea of how much would one particular side for a particular objective sacrifice a whole bunch of their own people in order to establish an attitude and things of that nature. And, you know, a lot of that was the idea of sacrificing people for the promotion of Zionism. And so, which would be very applicable in the case of what's happening right now, because from what I understand, and I haven't checked into it, there's a lot of issues referenced to, apparently, a lot of the things that Hamas did was, less than kind. And, so, but the question I have is how much of that was, let's nurture people to do this, or to whatever degree, let's do it ourselves. I don't know. In order to make sure we give the impression of not just Hamas, but everybody in Gaza, for example, as evil. Because if you can get the idea of everybody in Gaza as evil, well, all those evil people we can kill. And I don't know. I haven't studied it that much. But it seems to be, because I had a brief conversation on this today, it seems to be that there may be this idea of let's make them look bad, because there is some question of where did, you know, how did Gaza, or excuse me, Hamas really form? Is it the Palestinian people, or is it controlled opposition? And apparently that idea of being controlled opposition has been on the table for a long time. So, but I don't know. It's not something I really wonder about that much. Because I think the thing that it will be more of a focus, because apparently a month or two ago, the Israeli cabinet had a meeting in some underground caves underneath either the Dome on the Rock or the Al-Aqsa Mosque. All depends upon what name you want to use, right? And because, you know, a lot of the Christian community will call it the Dome on the Rock. Most the Islamic community calls it the Al-Aqsa Mosque. and we're talking about the same thing. So I don't know what the Jewish community discusses, but clearly there has been a lot of tension there, including a lot of events, even in the last few weeks, where Israeli groups will storm the mosque and do less than kind things. You know, it's kind of like, what would it be like for, you know, well, I'm talking with a bunch of people from the LDS community. What would it be like to get a whole bunch of Protestants together and go into an LDS meeting and ransack the place during a worship service? That wouldn't go over well, would it? But when Israel, the country of Israel, does it to the Al-Aqsa Mosque during the time where Muslims are striving to worship, that's okay. Is it? But apparently, again, the Israeli cabinet had a meeting in the caves, the underground caves, below the mosque in the last few weeks, noting the idea of this place is ours. And we're going to take it over. And of course, the issue is the order to take it over, you have to get rid of. And I think a lot of people say, let's get rid of the Dome on the Rock. Because when you talk about the Dome on the Rock, it's kind of a building. When you talk about the Al-Aqsa Mosque, you're talking about a mosque. It's not just a building. It's a mosque. And you have to remove that name from it in order to make it somehow softer, a softer target. Because if we say we're going to destroy the mosque, you're directly stating we're going after the Islamic community. And so you have to soften it. We call it the Dome of the Rock. I wonder about those things. And if, to whatever degree, you know, because there's a lot of discussion to whatever degree how much of this thing is either, you know, there's the idea of an intelligence failure or an outright false flag. To whatever degree that's true, you know, it is some of the atrocities that apparently occurred. Was it all done by Hamas? Or was it done by, you know? So I don't know. I haven't pursued it or whatnot. My concern is not the specifics of the events, but the reaction to it. Because are they given a reason to say, all right, now we can make Hamas or the Palestinian people look bad, therefore, when we do something vile to them, people won't complain about to us. There is this idea, a lot of people, I mean, they have shut down electricity and so forth to the Gaza Strip. And this will make it uncomfortable for people there. One gentleman I talked with, he says, you know, why don't they, you know, they're right there at the coast. Why don't, you know, they should have a lot of opportunity to do, you know, tourist things and whatnot, because, you know, great beach resort, whatnot, because there's a blockade. There's been a blockade for decades there. You want to take a pleasure boat and go to Gaza, good luck, because you will be stopped. If you want to be in Gaza and leave beyond a certain distance, I think that, you know, that kind of basically allow for fishing and that's it. You go any distance, they'll stop you. And so it is under siege. And of course, again, as I pointed out, the wall that isolates Gaza is a whole lot bigger than the Berlin Wall ever was. But this is the country of Israel, and we can't say anything foul about them. They are extremely cruel. And are the events that has occurred lately the stage being set for an excuse to destroy the mosque? Because there is apparently a lot of tension. Because, you know, I've seen this very clearly within the, you know, allegedly Jewish community within the U.S., because there are the Jews within the U.S. who are Zionists. So that's rah, rah, go, country of Israel. There are Jews that are basically apathetic. They're, you know, atheists, you know. But there is a Jewish community that says, we don't belong there. We follow not the Talmud, but the Tanakh, the Old Testament. And we don't belong in the country of Israel. You know, so those people exist, but you got to silence them. And apparently, there's also, because I remember back, 20, 30 years ago, where there was issues, I think it was somewhere in Africa and other places, where there was a Jewish community that was being devastated, and they were brought into the country of Israel. The problem is, they didn't, well, especially the ones from Africa, they didn't look like the rest of the Jewish community because they were black. But Orthodox Jews in that sense. So they were invited in, but there was a tension. And from what I understand, a lot of them were effectively invited out because, again, they didn't fit the model. But apparently there is, you know, because you hear about the Ashkenazi Jews, the others and so forth. You know, there are those that go towards Zionism, and there are those that go towards Judaism, or, you know, well, there's the Talmudic Jew, there's the Zionist, there's those that subscribe to the Tanakh, the Old Testament. And they're different. They have different perspectives, different understandings. And apparently it is the Zionists who are basically in control. And it appears that there is actually a serious tension within the Israeli community over those issues, including the idea that there are some who say it's time to take rebuild the temple and restart the sacrifices. And of course, there's going to be a lot of the Christian community impacted by Zionism say, go, let's do this, because we want to see Christ return, which gets to the whole idea of, you know, eschatology, and is there a uniform view of eschatology? Well, no, there's not. Especially when we get to the preterism or partial preterism idea, to how does it apply? What is in store? The idea of a tribulation being 7 years versus, you know, in this world you'll have tribulation, as I mentioned yesterday, and things of that nature. It's now. It's been now for 2,000 years. So it's, you know, it becomes a complicated question, but the issue is people will exploit that. And I wonder if we're about to see somehow, to whatever degree, exploited. And I think it'll be one of two things will happen. Either this is, it's kind of not yet. And not enough has happened that they will commit to doing the actual destruction of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Or, you know, because it's just not complete. Or it will happen. And I really think if it does happen, that, you know, especially with as the West is collapsing economically, it's going to really shake up the dynamics of the world we live in. And I don't think it's going to usher in the return of Christ, which obviously will get me in trouble with a whole lot of the Christian Zionists, because I think the Christian Zionists are dead wrong. But, you know, we can't talk about that, because that then you have to bring up the Bible, and we can't do that. Anyway, I had a delightful dialogue today, because one of the things I researched is, what is the local, you know, where does the local LDS people meet? I've emailed several people, including some LDS people that I know locally. Unfortunately, they did not respond. I don't know why. But I emailed a whole lot of Protestant people in reference to the idea of gathering to meet. And I got one good response, which was encouraging. Somebody who said, this would be interesting, but they're going to be out of country. But, you know, I really wonder if, and I even had a dialogue with an LDS gentleman in reference to inviting the Roman Catholic community, because I think that would add to the dialogue, make it fascinating. But one of the things, because what we talked about today was tithing. And that was fascinating, because the dialogue helped me a lot, because he was talking from an LDS perspective, the need to tithe. You know, his argument was, the Aaronic priesthood that apparently, and I'm not well studied on this from, I don't know if it's Doctrines of Covenants itself or Book of Mormon. I don't think it was in Pearl of Great Price, because that's what I've read, I think, and I don't recall that there. But anyway, there is the issue within the LDS community of the continuation of, you know, the Quorum of the Twelve and the modern day prophets, you know, Latter Day Saints and those kind of things. So I think, you know, the idea of a tithe they take very strongly. But what was fascinating is he pointed to, couldn't quote it, but I could, the Malachi, bring the whole tithe through the storehouse, and that things may overflow and those kind of things. And because the argument I give, the tithe was for the Levite. This is unambiguous. And what became clear in the dialogue, I will contend from the perspective of the Bible. One of the things I don't know is modern day Roman Catholicism, because, you know, in the time of Luther, one of his big issue was indulgences. And my sense is, and I don't know how accurate this is, because I don't know what they say about indulgences today, nor do I know what they say about the tithe. But clearly, it seems to me that what the Protestant church did is, oh, we're going to get rid of indulgences, but we're going to have the tithe, because the tithe funds the institution. And I would contend that the Protestant community and the Roman Catholic community, when they use the Bible as the reference, they have nothing to stand on in the idea of the modern tithe, because it's for the Levites, and claiming you're a Levite would be difficult. And it's food that is brought to the storehouse to feed the Levite, not a retirement plan or a car and things of that nature, or to pay for a building. None of that. But what was fascinating is, I would contend, if you argue from the Protestant or Roman Catholic position, the Roman Catholic may offer from the authority of the magisterium. From the Protestant community, you're supposed to argue from, you know, sola scriptura, the Bible alone, and I would suggest you have nothing to stand on. But the Latter-day Saints using the Aaronic priesthood and modern-day prophets and whatnot, they have something to stand on if their text is accurate, is valid, is true. And so what I can now, I think, more clearly see that if you look at the Bible alone as your reference, I will contend the tithe is fraud. It's theft. If you add the Latter-day Saint documents and look at that as true, they have an argument. So I would not go to them and say, you can't make an argument from your documents. No, they can't. Fine. But I will contend your documents, the extra-biblical documents, are not valid. They're as valid as the Quran, which isn't, because there's a conflict. Because again, I would contend there's a direct conflict between the Bible and the rest of the other books of, the Book of Mormon and so forth. So, but the objective, I think, is not to say, I want to form a dialogue to put you as a target to show you where you're wrong. But I want to say, all right, on this particular issue, we have maybe some clarity to understand why we each can take our stand, why each party could say our stand is consistent with our foundations. So I don't have to look at somebody within the LDS community and say you're bad because you do the tithe. No, you're consistent with your doctrine. I would say your doctrine is wrong, which is different. And I don't mean since your doctrine is wrong, I want you to die or I'm going to spit in your face. Not at all. Again, the person that I buy most of my food from, it subscribes to this. And I respect him. There's been a mutual respect. Fine. And I find this, I'm getting long again. It's fascinating. I want to expand on this. I want to go, I stated, if I could take care of my other issues, my intent would be to, because just down the road from the farmer's market is the Roman Catholic Church. And I would go to their door and ask, do you want to be part of this dialogue? Yeah, I've grown to have the boldness to do that. But, the issue is I got to pay rent. And that's not happening and there's a problem. But one last point. I did a timed 5K. It was pathetic, but better than the last really pathetic one. I had a delightful dialogue with a friend. I will call Rick my friend. He calls me a friend. It was a great, rational dialogue. And then I had, for at least an hour, a dialogue with Miss Lillian. And, we didn't get into a lot of things. I did tell her that I was hopefully to go up to Big Frog on the 30th. She told me about her son's visit from Chicago and their family that came by recently. Told me a few things about events at her church. She's at a, used to be Methodist. They now call it a community church because there's issues within the Methodist community. But I heard a lot from her. We did not discuss the tithe or things of that nature. But what I found very clearly with Miss Lillian, I have a friend. That's a big deal. That's a really big deal. There's another lady that I would love to be able to still call a friend. Because I've committed my life to her. My lady, my wife. I love you, know what you're about.